Now, that same state Supreme Court will have a liberal majority for the first time in 15 years, following the election of Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz on Tuesday in a race that set records for campaign spending. Her 10-year term on the court begins August 1st. She's likely to hear cases challenging the state's Republican-friendly political redistricting maps and the 1849 law that bans abortions. Now we have a Democratic governor, a Republican legislature, and soon a court that's expected to lean to the liberal side. So what does that mean for the future of high-profile issues here in the state? And are there clues from this week that point us toward Wisconsin's political future? You can join in at 800-642-1234. How will a liberal majority on the state Supreme Court change Wisconsin? How do you hope or fear that it could change things? What would you like to see the Republican-controlled legislature make their top priority? Do you see room for compromise between a Democratic governor and Republican lawmakers? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Anthony Trigoski is an assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse. Anthony, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
To start things off, how significant is this shift in the Supreme Court, big picture?
This is, big picture, a huge shift in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. In fact, Rob, many observers had called this the most important election anywhere in the United States in all of 2023. And that's for good reason. You mentioned some of the important issues that the Wisconsin State Supreme Court could hear. One of the most important certainly centers on the 1849 abortion ban in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the nation in the aftermath of the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. Janet Protasiewicz made abortion the centerpiece of her campaign, and the voters clearly responded to that. Now that case heads towards the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, and with a 4-3 liberal majority, we can make, I think, some pretty good predictions about how the abortion ban will fare when it goes before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Rob, you also mentioned gerrymandering. One more thing I would mention is the 2024 presidential election. Wisconsin could very well be the decisive state in the 2024 presidential election, and the Wisconsin State Supreme Court could be called on to hear many things related to that election, including voting laws, election administration, and the tabulation and certification of the votes. So looking ahead to 2024, this election has lots of relevance as well. This election lived up to the hype in terms of its importance, and this is a huge change for Wisconsin politics. As you said, Rob, it shifts the balance of power on one of the three branches of government, and that has a huge effect on Wisconsin politics more generally.
Now, the court isn't a legislature. The four members on August 1st can't just get together and say, okay, let's start changing laws. They have to wait for cases to work their way up to them. And the particular nature of those cases, the facts, the presentations, the legal history, that can put a brake on the court's ability to change things, even if they're temperamentally or judicially inclined to change them. Is there a limit as to how much they could change on some of these big issues?
There is a limit, and Rob, you mentioned the main limit, time. Time is the main limiting factor, in my view, for the change that the courts can make, because things do have to move through the judicial system, and sometimes that pace is not exactly a fast pace. But political scientists do observe predictable patterns in how judges view the cases. And so when the cases actually reach the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, or when the cases reach any court, as political scientists, we can make pretty reasonable predictions about how the justices will decide. And so I think the pace of change is something that people need to consider. But once those cases do reach the Supreme Court, I think in many cases we can make some pretty strong predictions about how they might turn out. And so change won't happen overnight, but change will certainly happen in some very important areas as a result of this election outcome.
Another set of laws that people I've seen hope or fear might change under this court goes back to the Scott Walker era, the Act 10 reforms on public employee unions, right to work, so-called laws on private employee unions, things like that. The thought that new legal challenges might emerge to parts of those laws and find a more sympathetic state Supreme Court. Is that something you might expect to happen?
I do expect that to happen, Rob, and that is because this is the first time in 15 years that we have seen a liberal majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. So you can imagine that there is, let's just say, a backlog of cases that might have been issued, that might have been put against some of those laws, but haven't because of the prospect that a conservative court would rule a certain way. But now with a liberal majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, there are going to be some opportunities at hand for those who might want to challenge particular laws. And so the fact that we now have a change for the first time in 15 years in the balance of power means that there are going to be a lot of people seeking to get their case before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court.
Talking to Anthony Chergosky, political scientist at UW La Crosse, looking at the balance of power in Wisconsin politics. What changes with a change at the State Supreme Court after this week's elections? You can join in with your thoughts, your hopes and fears, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Robert is with us in Eau Claire. Robert, hi.
Yeah, hi. Good to hear you. My question, or I'd like the observation of your guest with regards to the potential attempt to impeach Janet Protasiewicz when she had won by, I think, almost 200,000 votes or maybe more. I'm curious to hear what he would say the response would that to be. What would the response be if there was an attempt to impeach her?
I gotcha. Thanks for the call, Robert. Now, Anthony, as you know, we had a special state Senate election in Wisconsin. It restored a Republican two-third majority in the Senate. Impeachment laws, as I read them, a majority in the Assembly issues the impeachment. The Senate would have to vote in a two-thirds majority to completely impeach not just a judge, but a governor or any other civil officer of the state, I believe is the phrase. What are the prospects as you see them?
Well, first of all, Rob, it's an important reminder that while the Republican-friendly maps might be in jeopardy, those Republican-friendly maps are still in place. And so the Republicans enjoy overwhelming majorities in both the state assembly and the state Senate. As you mentioned, as a result of that key special election for the state Senate, Republicans have 22 seats in the state Senate, while Democrats only have 11 seats in the state Senate. So Republicans do have that two-thirds majority in the state Senate. Now, the leader in the Republican Party in the state Senate, Devin LeMahieu, poured some cold water, let's just say, on those prospects of impeaching Janet Protasiewicz. He tried to tamp down the speculation about that. And frankly, I don't think it was helpful for the Republican Party to talk about impeaching someone who had yet to be elected. And I think Devin LeMahieu, the leader of the Republicans in the state Senate, understood that and tried to maybe reset the tone, reset the conversation, and try to steer the conversation away from the prospect of impeaching Protasiewicz.
Robert, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Looking ahead to potential strategies and talking here about, again, those things like Act 10 reforms and right to work, the conservative group Institute for Reforming Government called for Republicans in a press release today to use the state constitution to protect Walker-era changes. I'm quoting from their press release. Conservatives need to meet the moment by going bold, as liberals will assuredly be doing, proposing amendments on topics like universal school choice, public union regulation, right to work, agency authority, and partisan gerrymandering claims. So the idea of using the state constitution to advance or cement some policy agendas. What do you think of that notion, Anthony?
It certainly is a possibility because it gets around the governor. The governor cannot veto constitutional amendments. They need to be voted on twice by the state legislature, and then they need to be voted on by the public. So it is a potential strategy to get around the Democratic governor, Tony Evers, and now to get around the majority for the liberals on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. So I think Republicans are right now trying to figure out what their next move might be. They might be thinking about some course corrections that they could make in doing better in statewide elections. So I've heard Republicans talking about how they might become more competitive in statewide elections. And as you said, Rob, I've also heard Republicans talk about how they might achieve their policy goals in light of the fact that there is a Democratic governor now and soon to be a 4-3 liberal majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. So I'm not surprised to hear the prospect of constitutional amendments come up in the conversation. As we've noted, that gets them around the courts and the governor and allows the people to weigh in on those amendments. But it is a high risk strategy because constitutional amendments are a big deal. And a constitutional amendment is something that has to be taken very seriously. And so while constitutional amendments have their place, I don't know that governing by constitutional amendment is a route that we want to go down. So constitutional amendments are a valid part of the political process in Wisconsin politics, but we have to be wary of their overuse or their misuse. And so I expect those to be the considerations that are relevant as we go down this road in Wisconsin politics.
And to distinguish, we had these bail constitutional amendments. We're planning to talk about those more on Monday on the show. But to change the bail system in ways that people wanted to, those were already defined in the Constitution. So that's a case where you couldn't legislate those changes without altering the Constitution, as I understand it. So that's a distinction to make between this idea of, say, putting Act 10 in the Constitution.
That's quite right, Rob. And so I think the appropriate use and the inappropriate uses of constitutional amendments are going to be a key topic in Wisconsin politics as the Republican majorities in the state legislature try to cope with this setback that they've faced, and as the Republican Party and the conservative movement more generally tries to chart out their next steps forward, having suffered this defeat in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court election.
Talking to Anthony Chergosky, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-La Crosse, with us today to look at this week's elections, what they can mean for big issues like abortion, redistricting, election law, and coming up, we'll get into what they might mean for the future of Wisconsin politics. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you hope for or worry about in the new lineup, a liberal majority in the state Supreme Court? What do you think this week's elections mean, if anything, for the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, for nonpartisan elections? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Anthony Chergosky, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-La Crosse. Following Tuesday's elections, we're looking at likely next steps for Democrats and Republicans in Wisconsin, what that can mean for our courts, the legislature, the governor's office, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. With the change in control in the state Supreme Court, effective August 1st, what are you hoping to see from that court on a big issue that's important to you? What are you hoping they don't change? What do you want to see from the party you lean toward, Republicans, Democrats, or a different party, when it comes to the next election cycle? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Kathy is with us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Well, hi. So I guess my question was how to get these constitutional amendments even on the ballot, because I'm still fighting for legalizing marijuana. It was on the ballot for just like a questionnaire, and we're like 73% of Wisconsinites want this. So they ignored it, the Republican legislation, and I'm a Democrat hardcore. So is that something the Democrats can go around and try to make a constitutional amendment on the ballot?
Kathy, thanks for the call. So Kathy had voted in a non-binding referendum there. These constitutional amendment referenda, as you mentioned, Anthony, it's a longer process. Remind us how that goes from idea to ballot.
Absolutely, Rob. It takes two votes by the legislature, and then it goes to the voters. So the governor does not weigh in on this issue of a constitutional amendment. The governor does not have veto power. Now, I have some bad news for Kathy. The Republican-controlled legislature has declined to take up the issue of marijuana legalization, and right now, the Republicans are even sorting out some internal divisions surrounding medical marijuana. So that is not a constitutional amendment that we are likely to see. We are likely to see talk of conservative constitutional amendments that may not get the approval of Governor Evers, so they want to work around the veto. And they also may want to work around this new 4-3 liberal majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. So as we've talked about, Rob, as the conservative movement tries to pick up the pieces and chart a new way forward, we're likely to hear more talk of these constitutional amendments and other strategies that conservatives and Republicans might use as they move forward following this setback in Tuesday's election.
Thanks a lot for that call, Kathy, at 800-642-1234. Anthony, I want to ask you what you think about the political meaning of this week's election results, what it could mean for the future, with the caution that, you know, in 2008, Barack Obama and Democrats swept the table here in Wisconsin. And in 2010, Scott Walker and the Republicans did exactly the opposite. So it can be hard to learn lessons like that. That said, what are you looking at?
Yeah, we know that it's dangerous to read too much into any one election in Wisconsin. We know that Wisconsin politics can be wild and wacky, and so we don't want to draw too many conclusions from any single election. But there are some important conclusions we can draw, in most notably trends from past elections that seem to have continued into this election, Rob. One that I want to note is the suburbs of Milwaukee and some other suburbs around Wisconsin. We have been watching those suburbs very closely throughout the Trump era because the suburbs, particularly the suburbs of Milwaukee, used to be the heart and soul of the Republican Party, used to be the heart and soul of the conservative movement. In the Trump era, the base of the Republican Party has really drifted into those rural parts of Wisconsin, and the urban areas of Wisconsin have moved much more into the Democratic Party camp. That has meant that suburban areas are the new battlegrounds in Wisconsin. And we saw suburban areas continue their shift towards the Democratic Party and towards Democratic Party aligned candidates. We saw that with Janet Protasiewicz on Tuesday. We also saw a massive voter turnout in Dane County and a massive margin for Janet Protasiewicz in Dane County. She got over 80% of the vote in Dane County. She got almost 200,000 votes out of Dane County. And so the Republicans have a huge Dane County problem when it comes to the urban-rural split. Republicans are running up huge margins in rural Wisconsin, but Dane County is a fast-growing part of the state in terms of population. And just as Dane County continues to grow in population, it continues to deliver larger and larger margins for Democratic candidates. So, Rob, those would be the trends that I think are continuing into this week's election from past elections, that urban-rural split and the suburbs continuing their drift into the Democratic Party fold.
Back to our callers now. Leanne is with us in Madison. Leanne, hi.
Hi. This is a historical question, which shows you I haven't been keeping up with my history over the years. But to your guest, have we seen in the past this kind of intentional ideology pursuit and, you know, stay in power pursuit, and who cares about what's best for the people or what they really want?
Interesting question, Leanne. I think often we have a sense like politics now is bad. We did better in the past. Anthony, is there anything to that?
Yeah, there is something to that in the sense that we have historic polarization, historic partisanship, and that's why every election seems like the most important election ever. And it's frequently said in Wisconsin that, hey, this election is the most important one in our lifetimes. But that can be true for every election if the political divide keeps growing, if the level of partisanship keeps growing, and as the stakes keep increasing. And so we get a little tired in Wisconsin, perhaps, of hearing that, hey, this election's the most important one ever. But this election really, really did matter, and it correctly got nationwide attention due to the high stakes.
Thanks for that call, Ann. Jim is with us now in Cedarburg. Hi, Jim.
Thanks, Rob. To your guest, the election brought in more money than, you know, in historical highs. But my question is about what was Scott Walker's contribution to allowing that dark money to come into our political campaigns? That's my question.
Jim, thanks for the call. Anthony, we know there are big U.S. Supreme Court rulings that allowed money into politics in different ways. We had some changes here in Wisconsin as well. How significant were they?
They were very significant, Rob. The money worked in a couple ways, and the money worked in different ways on different sides. For Janet Protasiewicz, she got huge amounts of transfers from the Democratic Party. Political parties in Wisconsin are allowed to transfer unlimited amounts of money to candidates. And Protas Sayewicz got millions and millions and millions of dollars from the Wisconsin Democratic Party. The Wisconsin Democratic Party is a money-raising machine. They do exceptionally well when it comes to fundraising, and Protas Sayewicz absolutely benefited from that. Protas Sayewicz had a pretty solid spending advantage throughout this campaign. But the spending advantage did close a bit because some outside groups came in to support the Dan Kelly campaign. Fair Courts America, a super PAC backed by GOP mega donor Dick Uihlein, and Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the powerful business group in this state. They spent pretty lavishly, honestly, to support Dan Kelly. And so both sides had quite a bit of money. The money was very different, though. With Protas Sayewicz, it was money that she had raised from kind of small dollar grassroots donors, plus these huge transfers from the Democratic Party, while Dan Kelly was very reliant on that outside PAC money in order to keep his campaign afloat.
Thanks for that call. Anthony, a lot of our callers over time have been concerned about the amount of money in elections, especially judicial elections. Do you think that that does have a damaging effect on the kind of campaigns we see?
I think it's a conversation that we have to have, Rob, because it would be one thing if we only slightly broke the record for most spending in a judicial election in American history, but we absolutely shattered the existing record for most spending on a judicial election in American history. The previous record was $15 million, and we basically tripled that record this time around. So I think there for sure is a conversation to be had about campaign finance, particularly in the context of judicial elections, as we assess the aftermath of this Tuesday's election.
Anthony, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Anthony Trigosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. He was with us today to talk about the shifting balance of political power in Wisconsin, what it might mean for politics and policy in our state in the months and years to come. Coming up, we'll take a closer look at nonpartisan elections here in the state, and we're starting to touch on that, why they feel more and more partisan these days. Money, probably part of that story.